Hello, everyone. Welcome to the call today. We are in the middle of November. Get you ready for 20 and 13 as we teach you some of the more principles and laws of persuasion. Welcome to those. I know a lot of doing replay based on schedule. Those, especially international, do a lot of replay there, and that's fine. You'll just have to send me your questions at whypersuasion.com. Some are listening via the net where you're not allowed to communicate. You can send me your questions. I'll be happy to answer those. And some of you are on the phone. So either way, we can take your questions, get you ready to roll. Goal here, spend 15, 20 minutes on a tool, on a law of persuasion, take questions, learn how to apply it, give you a little homework so you can work on a little bit every time, every week. So we've been in a kind of a law of persuasion series the last couple of weeks. Now, this is kind of the granddaddy of them all. Probably the most difficult to grasp, but the most important, because I've told you time and time again, your goal is to help people persuade themselves. Create that internal pressure. That's what dissonance is. Maybe you've heard of cognitive dissonance. Kind of explain it here with a study. So persuasion on a university level, and one of that, which students do a research project on the law of dissonance, see if they could create inner pressure in other students. So they did a little research. One particular group did a fascinating research. They found out that 97% of females and 92% of males claim to wash their hands after taking care of business. Now, what actually happens is 75% of females and 58% of males actually wash their hands. So the students decided to camp out the university library restroom stalls waiting for someone that did not wash their hands. They'd follow them into the hallway and say in a loud voice, "Hey, wait, stop, you forgot to wash your hands." This created dissonance, which is the discrepancy between what you believe or say you believe and what you actually do. It's a critical persuasion tool. See, it's easy. The human brain needs to be right. You prove someone that they're wrong, the rubber band will stretch. I call it a rubber band. It's that tension. If you stretch that rubber band too far, it'll snap. So your friend says, "Hey, help me out trying to lose weight." You come home and they've polished off 12 Krispy Kreme donuts. If you say anything, you better duck because it's going to be your fault. You stretched the rubber band too far. You know, just like this restroom study. When they caught them, most of the people didn't say, "Yeah, you caught me." No, that's not what people do. They heard some strange things. "No, you just didn't see me. Pervert, call security. This person's watching me in the bathroom. No, my professor said the germs are too strong. I was just about to use my hand sanitizer." Well, you're only supposed to wash your hands before you eat. Very few people admit they were wrong and washed their hands. That's why you need to understand dissonance. So basically, we have our beliefs, our attitudes, and the commitments we make. We believe, we keep the commitments. That's our cognitions. And when we do anything inconsistent with that, it makes us feel awkward or uncomfortable. It stretches a rubber band. We can't live with that. Remember, I'll say it again, the human brain needs to be right. You back anybody in the corner, you prove them they're wrong. You tell them that they're lying to you. Hey, it might feel good, but rarely is that going to be persuasive. Because you proved something they're wrong. You backed them in a corner. You made the perfect case, but you never heard from them again. Let me give you some examples here. Let's see. How about you eat a grape at the grocery store? But wait a minute. Your belief is that stealing. Well, I've got to taste it for quality, right? A little dissonance reduction there. You're speeding. Oh, my, well, that's dangerous. I shouldn't speed. Well, I've got this really important meeting. You're texting while you drive. That's against the law. That's your belief. Well, I'm a better driver than most. That's how you reduce your dissonance. You eat fast food. You know it's unhealthy for you, but wait, you know, I've been doing pretty good lately, and I'm in a rush. Not exercising on vacation. You believe you should exercise every day? Well, I'll exercise more next week. You play the lottery, you believe, you know you can't win. You know the odds. Well, someone has to win is how you reduce dissonance. You say a little white lie, and you know lying's wrong. That's your belief. Well, it's okay to protect other people's feelings. You see where we're going with this? That's why it's important. So when someone feels this dissonance or this rubber band stretching, and bear with me here, there are a couple of things that you need to notice in your prospect. A lot of times people go into the denial, where they deny there's a problem or they demean the source. That's denial with dissonance. Maybe it's the reframe where they modify their thinking, they change their understanding a little bit. Some people do the search. They discredit the source. They look for social validation. So Some people do the separation where they compartmentalize. Well, it's okay here, but not here. Well, that's for other people, but not me. Some people rationalize. They find the excuses why they justify the behavior. Some people might even get into the modify where they admit their mistake or make the change. And again, we're going deep here to understand the law of dissonance. Let me just kind of walk through this and how this works. Oh, let's say you've been to the doctor and the parchment paper, and they've run some tests. The doctor comes in, not very happy. He says, look, your cholesterol and your blood pressure, come on. Commit to me right now, no more fatty foods. You know, they're in authority, wearing the white coat. And you commit to your doctor, all right, I'll no longer eat fatty foods. And your belief is you keep the commitment that you made. That's your belief. So you've done pretty well for a couple of weeks, but you had one of those bad days. You come home, nobody's home. You're hungry. You look in the fridge, nothing there. You look in the freezer, and you open the freezer, and a light comes on. You almost like you hear music as you see a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I can tell you all the flavors. There's kitchen sink, Cherry Garcia, Chunky Monkey, Cinnamon Bun, anyway. So as you reach for it, you remember your commitment to the doctor that stretches your rubber band. You feel that discrepancy. You cannot live with that. So maybe you do the denial where you say, oh, the doctor doesn't know what he's talking about. I heard he's a bad doctor. He's kind of fat himself. He's the Chunky Monkey. Who's he to tell me that I can't have this ice cream? And you eat the whole thing. Or maybe you do the reframe. And what the doctor really meant was burgers and fries, because that's bad fat. This has calcium in it. What's he want me to get? Osteoporosis? And you eat the whole thing. Or the search. Well, I was on the internet. I saw this man in Indianapolis who lost 27 pounds on the Ben and Jerry's ice cream diet. And you make it okay. Or you rationalize. Well, if I do 10 push-ups for every bite I take, I'll break even. We can go on and on, but this is what happens when we talk about dissonance. We cannot live with it, whether it's you or your prospect. When we're talking about influence or self-persuasion, this happens to us every day. I'll give you a personal example. My belief is that you should eat good, you should eat well, you should exercise every day, and you shouldn't eat after 7 o'clock at night. But all of a sudden, we go on vacation, what happens? You have to remember, it's easier to amend your belief why it's okay versus changing your belief. So you're on vacation, calories don't count. Or so if you go on a cruise, that's 7 meals a day. You got to eat because you got to get your money's worth. So if you don't eat it, they're going to throw it away. You're not hungry, but you're going to stay up for the midnight dessert buffet. I've even lost 5 pounds before a cruise, so I'd break even. Right? So that's what we do. So we go on this cruise to Bermuda. I go with my wife. And I was speaking during the days at sea, and at the ports we were able to go ashore. So we went ashore one day, and we came back. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was changing my clothes. My wife saw, well, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to get something to eat. She looked at me and says, are you hungry? I said, well, no, that's just kind of what you do, right? You're on a cruise. That's what you do. She says, I'm going to go do aerobics. I'm like, oh, all right. So I committed to myself I'd go run 3 miles. I enjoy running. Especially in the sun, you know, overlooking this turquoise water. It's a beautiful place. So I committed to myself 3 miles, and my belief is I keep my commitments to myself. So these are small tracks. What is it, 47 laps per mile? I don't remember what it was. So I would start jogging. I was feeling good. The sun was up. It was nice getting some sun. But every time I passed the back of the ship, I smelled something that smelled really good. It was the hamburger stand, hot dogs and french fries and the hamburgers. I'm like, oh, I love a good burger, but no. I said 3 miles. I've gone 3 miles. So it's about halfway done, and I realized the person that was in front of me jogging was no longer in front of me and had stopped at this hamburger stand and was eating a burger and fries. I'm like, wait a minute. If he can do it, I can do it. I'm like, no, 3 miles. So I had about 10 laps left, and at the time it made perfect sense. My wife still does not know this. I stopped in line, kept jogging in line, and got my hamburger and fries and walked the remaining 10 laps because I would break even. Okay, that's classic dissonance. Now, of course, right now it doesn't make any sense, but at the time it made perfect sense. And so what does that mean with understanding, persuasion? The answer is everything. Okay, this is the most complex law, but you understand this. You are a power persuader. Your goal is to get as many commitments and as many yeses during your presentation. Here's an example. So this is at a beach, Jones Beach. It's near New York City. Has a boardwalk. Beautiful place. So there's a couple people in the study. There's someone called the Confederate. That's somebody who's in on the study. And what would happen is they would go get about 5 feet away from somebody who was already laying on a towel, and they'd put their towel down, like a little electronic device, like a CD player, lay there for a little bit, and they'd walk away. Now, the Confederate, a thief in on the study, would walk and steal the CD player and walk towards the blind walk. And this person laying down, the stranger's watching this, so what percent is going to risk personal harm? The answer is 20%. Now let's try it again. Put the blanket down, the CD player, you lay there for a little bit, you stand up and you turn to the person that's 5 feet away and you just say, hey, will you watch my things? And they say, sure. You get the commitment, you get the yes. Now when the thief comes, it goes from 20% that attempted to stop the thief to 95%. Your goal is to get as many yeses as possible, get as many commitments as possible, because people believe they keep those commitments. They realize that buyer's remorse is a form of dissonance. They felt like they got taken advantage of. It wasn't the right product. They got pushed into a corner. They didn't really need it. So as good as they thought, that's all forms of dissonance. Here's another one. This was a study done by Knox and Inkster. This was at a horse racing track. Okay, so they interviewed people before they placed a bet. They were betting on these horses to see how confident they were in the decisions that they were making. Then they had another series of questions afterwards, and embedded in there was that same question as far as how confident they were. Remember, the human brain needs to be right. So before they placed that bet, what about this? They weren't as confident, but once they put it down, because they're the type of person that makes good decisions, they make educated decisions, even though it's gambling, they're more confident with their decision. Okay, what's this have to do with persuasion influence? The answer is, hold on, everything. See, when they're talking to you about your product, your service, your home-based business, whatever it is, they're looking for every reason not to do it. They're looking for ways why it won't work. But once you give them one reason why it'll work, why it solves their problem, why they should do it, boom, they're in. Now they're looking for every reason why they should do it. That's why if they say, yes, let's go for it, that's when you start filling out the paperwork. You make it happen. You fill in the blanks later. They don't need to know everything about your product or service before they get ready to do it. If you start vomiting all those features and benefits, you're going to give them reasons not to do it. So once they're ready to roll, it doesn't matter if they don't understand everything. It will backfire. Even with network marketers, they start talking about compensation plan, a few things. Now, sometimes that works, but for most people, it's too confusing, and it's a reason not to do it because they don't really get it. They'll say they do, but they don't usually get it. So the key thing here is get as many yeses as possible. Get as many commitments as possible. And utilize part of the law of dissonance, what social psychologists call foot in the door, also known as the FITD technique. Don't confuse it with door in the face. That's a law of contrast. That's another lesson. This is foot in the door. It's known as sequential request. So basically, if you can get a yes, an easy yes right up front, the person perceives themselves to be helpful. And then getting the second yes is even easier because they believe that they're helping out and they're like more likely to consent. Now, what does that mean? Let me just kind of explain that. I know I'm going deep here. Your goal with foot in the door is start with small requests that lead up to larger requests. Even in negotiation, you start with the easiest yeses first before you get to the larger yeses. Get the thing. That's why we do the set-aside technique when I teach negotiation. You don't start with the money first. Start with the easy stuff. Okay, what date do you want to take the delivery? What do you want to do this? Yes, yes, yes. Roadblock, oh, let's set that aside. Yes, 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 yes. And then the final, after about 20 yeses, now you can bring the last and final yes. And it's easier for people to say yes after they've said a few yeses. So there are the studies. Let me just talk about the studies here. I'm all about the studies. I'll not teach you something unless I can prove it with a study. So you go to college students, right? Your psychology students. So they go to them and say, okay, hey, will you participate in a study on thinking processes at 6 a.m. on Saturday? Woo! I mean, that's a lot to ask. The time, it's Saturday. You know, only 24% of the students said yes. Not very much. Okay, let's see what we need to do. So next time around, they say this. Hey, we're doing a study on thinking processes. Will you participate? Well, yeah. It's a Saturday. Are you available? Well, yeah. It's at 6 a.m. Will you be there? But from 24% to 56%, it more than doubled This is huge. So if you have a point in your presentation, whether it's an introduction or call to action, and you're getting a lot of resistance, break it down to smaller yeses, break it down to smaller commitments, and it will double. It will double the amount of people that say yes when you can break it down to smaller pieces. What that means is what you're asking is too big. Break it down into smaller yeses. If there's one thing I want you to learn, that's what it is today. Very important. Here's an interesting one. This is the American Cancer Society. They want people to go door-to-door asking money, their neighbors for money. They did something that had a 700% increase in volunteers. 700%. This is what they did. So they get a phone call in the evening, say, hey, we're doing a survey. Will you participate? All right, sure. There's a series of questions. And one of the questions was, hey, if American Cancer Society ever called you and asked you to volunteer 3 hours of your time to collect charitable donations, would you do it? It's a survey. I don't want to look bad. Yeah, I probably would do that. Okay, 2 weeks later, here's the call from American Cancer Society. They don't even remember the survey. Hey, will you donate 3 hours? Okay, 700% increase in volunteers, just foot in the door. Getting someone to wear a pen, getting someone, hey, let me have 5 minutes of your time. Can I remove the spot of your out of your carpet? Can you, anything that's small and little, will you just try a little taste of this? Will you try this for a week? Whatever it is, small pieces, foot in the door. Because remember, when you're getting commitments, smaller commitments will always lead to larger commitments. And written commitments are more powerful than verbal commitments. If you get someone to commit, if you're doing a negotiation, get them to write it on a napkin is better than nothing. And make it as public as possible. Tell as many people as possible that you came to agreement, that people are going to help you out, that they're going to join your business. Whatever it is, make it as public as possible. It makes it stick a lot better. So you always think, okay, what can you say, what can you do, a small initial request to get as many yeses as possible, and then just keep building from there. So dissonance is power. To really understand how it works and watch in the mind of your prospects. So the key is to create a little distance, create a little internal pressure, but if you stretch too far, that's when you get the denial that we talked earlier, and that is something that helps. Now, you just got a question here about more information on this. The law of dissonance is in the magnetic persuasion audios. You're welcome to listen to that. We'll go a little deeper into that. We have more time on an audio than we do in this, to what we do today. A question about the application. Let me kind of give you a little formula for application, how it works. Your goal is to, here's the first thing you do is you want to find their cognition. Remember, cognition is their beliefs. What are their beliefs? Why are they talking to you? What are their beliefs about a home-based business? What are their beliefs about insurance? What are their beliefs about your product or service? What are their beliefs about donating to a charity? Find out their beliefs. Number two, get a commitment. Get them to say yes. Number three, stretch the rubber band, create a little dissonance. And number four, offer the solution. So you're talking about, let's do a home-based business. Got a question on that. So let's do a home-based business. So you find out that they believe they're not spending enough time with their kids, that they're probably going to lose their job, they're concerned about the economy, and their retirement's not even close to where it needs to be. All right, so now you find that out. So, and you know, and you get a commitment. So if I can show you a home-based business can generate an extra $5,000 in the next couple months, would you be interested? Well, yeah. Okay, well, if we don't do anything, do you think you'll be employed in the next couple of years? Well, it creates dissonance, that stretches the rubber band. Well, if nothing changes, or be able to spend time with your children, stretches the rubber band, then your solution, of course, is your business. That's how it is. If you don't get money if you're in charge of getting donations for a charity, find out their beliefs. They like to donate. They like to give back. Great. If I showed you a charity that's really making a difference in the inner city or with this disease, would you be willing to help out? Well, yeah. Okay, well, if you don't help out, what's going to happen? Oh, the dissonance. Well, they're not going to be helped. People live on the streets. Okay, well, here's the solution. For 10 cents a day, for 15 cents a day, for a cafe latte a week, and offer the solution. That is how you create the dissonance. So this is what I want you to do. This is what I want you to think about. is I want you to look at your presentation, whether it's on a phone or from a stage, doesn't matter, and find that point of greatest resistance with your audience, or, you know, whether one-on-one or with your audience, and I want you to use foot in the door, the FITD. Take that moment and break it down to at least three smaller yeses, three smaller commitments, so you get less resistance at that point. That's using distance a little bit at a time, get as many yeses as possible, and it will help you out. All right. Any questions, either over the phone, via the net, on how this works? Okay, I got one here. As far as, Kirk, can you explain the separation part of dissonance? Separation is, it's okay here, but not here. Other people should do it, but I don't do it. You know, other people aren't good, shouldn't text and drive, but I'm okay because I'm a better driver. Well, that's their private life, not their public life. It's okay, but not here. That's what the separation is. We see that in politics all the time. Well, it's okay for that party, but not this party. Well, they get in their private life. It doesn't matter what they do. This is their public life. And we see it all the time. Okay? Good question. How will this ever backfire? Well, yeah, like we talked about, if you stretch rubber band too far, well, that happens when they don't believe you, or your claim is just way too big or too ridiculous, or you don't provide the solution. It'll backfire. You know what? It's fun sometimes to stretch people's rubber band, but in persuasion, you don't back people into a corner. To use too much fear, for example, has the opposite effect. You show teenagers and driver's ed of these cars, all these dead bodies and blood everywhere. It's so much, they start laughing because it's just too much fear. And it has to be realistic enough that they can believe it, because that's just too much sometimes. A lot of times they talk about drugs and all this that's going to happen to them. It's just not realistic. It's too much, and it has the opposite effect, and it backfires. So here's an example. So I'm training financial planners. And these guys were good. They gave presentations, and they were pretty good. The presentation had a lot of facts and convincing statistics, but they wanted to be more persuasive and more people to say yes. And so they built a lot of value in their product. People knew it was a great deal, but you know, a lot of people weren't enrolling with these financial planners or doing business with them. Because what happened is a lot of these clients would think, there's plenty of time, I can do it later. But so using the dissonance, why do you think they were resisting becoming clients? Think about it. Why would they resist? So the rubber band stretched maybe a little too far, and they're thinking, oh, I can do it later, I don't need to do it now. What happened is they got stuck in denial. They did not address the denial factor of dissonance. See, it's human nature to deny there's a current problem, we can do it later, we can procrastinate, and then the rubber band's no longer stretched, and they say, okay, I can do it later. And that, we know as persuaders, that always means no. So what happened is the financial planners added a time element to their presentation to overcome the denial. Prospects could visually see if they waited or procrastinated how much money they would lose. And so they addressed it before they even started getting denial. I can do it later. It doesn't matter. I've got plenty of time. They fixed that. So when they did that, client acquisition dramatically increased. They were shown how much money they have already lost or would lose by waiting to invest. And the key is to prevent them from creating a reason why it does not apply to them. That is dissonance. We see it everywhere. You cannot go against your belief, go against your commitment, and live with it. You're a charitable person. You're a good person, right? That's what you're thinking. That's your belief. And you're out late at night, flipping the channels on the TV, getting ready to go to bed. Oh, infomercial. Children in South America. 10 cents a day, your belief's a charitable person, your rubber band's stretching, what do you do? You flip the channel. As you flip the channel, you say, I already give to this other charity, so I'm okay. Or you say, well, I heard some of those are scams, and the money doesn't get to the children, right? We do that. We have to, because we wouldn't be able to sleep at night if we didn't go past the things against our beliefs and the commitments that we make. So this is a part of self-persuasion and influencing other people. Any other questions? This is a question about the most appropriate time to use it. Usually during your presentation, probably during the introduction part, stretching that rubber band, you have the what's in it for me, and then, okay, remember, as persuaders, you're problem solvers. So finding a problem, you know, that's their cognition, that's their belief, stretching the rubber band. Okay, well, if we don't do this, what's going to happen? You know, we want life insurance. Well, if we don't get life insurance and something happens to you, what's going to happen? Well, my family's not going to be protected. That's creating dissonance. Well, if we don't get you on an exercise program this month, what's going to happen? I don't go on a diet this month, what's going to happen? You know, heart attack, stroke, not live very long. That's all part of that, too. So understand exactly how that works. This is important that you realize how to apply that. Good question. Any others? So it says, so Kurt, it's important to create dissonance, but not too much. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You want them to stretch that rubber band, but if you go too far, too much, you back them into a corner. If you're working on a foreclosure and you back them into a corner, look, if we don't fix this now, this is going to happen. You live on the street eating dog food. Right? It might be a little too much. It's your fault. I can't believe you let your house go this far. You know, we're talking about very highly emotional issues that will backfire on you. You have to be very careful in the way you address that. Good question. Any other questions? All right. So just to review the homework here. Find that point of great resistance in your presentation and break it down into smaller pieces. Little things they can do. So if you're negotiating, little things first. Let's do the interest rate. Let's do the time of closing. Let's do the color they want it in. Let's do the smaller things that make a big difference. Here's another example. When you talk about dissonance, we see this with, even buying a car. The little steps. They get you in because they're on sale. They get you to take a test drive, the little step at a time. They don't try to sell you a car right away, the little steps at a time. They don't overwhelm you with that much information, whether it's a negotiation or buying a car or buying a TV. It's a little bit at a time. We've studied this with encyclopedia salespeople. We don't see them that often much. When they go to your door, because a lot of it's gotten digital, they used to have their presentation was 20 S's. They didn't say, hey, do you want encyclopedias? That's too much. What? You say, hey, do you live here? Well, yeah. Do you love your children? Well, yeah. Okay. Well, yes, 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 yes. Even the physical movement of yes, I have a question here about that, increases it. If you can get their head to move up and down, that increases the chance they're going to say yes. That's why you see the commercials with they're singing a song and there's a bouncing ball going from word to word at the bottom of the screen that gets people to kind of go up and down. Increases the chances. I know it's way out there, but it does increase the chances of them saying yes. All right. So keep working on that. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next couple of weeks, and we'll post everything on whypersuasion.com. If you have questions, whypersuasion.com. Any suggestions or things that you need, again, this is in the Magnetic Persuasion series. If you want more on the Law of Dissonance and use the workbook, you can work through it. With that, everyone have an incredible week. Next week is it's close to Thanksgiving if you're in the United States. We'll let you know if we can't get enough people on a call. We'll post a recording on the website. So with that, everyone have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night, everyone.